Okay, so again, my appreciation for the invitation. I'm going to talk mostly about work done at the University of Manchester, but I'm mostly working my time in Madrid at this institute there. And I will also at the end mention ongoing work with Pablo San. I mean, the work in Manchester is done with Professor Nils Vallet. And I will also mention work in progress in Madrid with Pablo San Jose and Jose González. And this is a bit of the outline of the work. Okay, I don't need to highlight again these outstanding experiments which were the big news in the APS mass meeting last year. Let me mention in passing a previous work on twisted bilayer, starting with João López dos Santos, Nuno Pérez, and Antonio Castroneto, and there were many people. I mean, the magic angles were identified by McDonald and Bistritzer by noticing that the Fermi velocity actually went to zero in these twisted systems for some values of the angle. And I would like later to mention this work we published shortly later. It was also mentioned by Arvin in this panel the other day. And if you kill the AA hopping in this model, this continuum model, you get an even simpler model, which also shows very nice magic angles. And presumably it's easier to study. Also, it's a bit frustrating because neither us nor Arvin have made too much progress yet. Okay, this is a picture we started by doing tight binding calculation. This is also early work. We looked at interactions before the experiments actually, and we did mean field theory, ordinary mean field theory, using a Hubbard model at the atomic level. So a Hubbard term included into the PZ orbitals of the carbon atoms. And we found something which, with retrospect, is kind of quite to be expected. The critical value of U dropped significantly. The critical value for antiferromagnetism, which is the leading instability of graphene in the presence of a Hubbard U, dropped significantly because the Fermi velocity dropped as well. And in addition, if you added a perpendicular field, you got really flat bands, and that favored ferromagnetism. Local ferromagnetism, which then between different AA regions had an antiferromagnetic coupling, so the system was locally ferromagnetic and overall to kind of a twisted ferrimagnet or something like that. But this is not what I'm going to concentrate on. Okay, these are early work we did, starting by doing tight binding. And let me also highlight that this was the first paper that noticed something non-trivial. Typically, people mention that in these twisted bilayers, the charge is concentrated in the AA region. This is partially true, but not the entire truth. It depends on where in the Brillouin zone you're sitting. If you look at states at the gamma point, they're actually very spread, these are tight binding calculations, throughout the entire Moiré unit cell. And they actually, the density of these states vanish at the AA region. And I think that's a symmetry requirement. While at the K and M points, most of the charge density is indeed in the AA regions. And that's why people claim that most of the charge, I mean, you think that the system is a series of quantum dots where most of the charge is located in the AA region. This is not the entire story. And as I said, that was already mentioned in this paper, which appeared shortly after the experiment. I would like also to highlight the very impressive work on the nature of the Van Leer function, which is being intensively debated in this workshop. I mean, typically when you look at flat bands, immediately you think of very localized orbitals, atomic orbitals, and that is the case in a lot of strongly correlated systems. And here one has very flat bands, but this is a cartoon of these Van Leer functions. And the Van Leer functions, they look to overlap strongly in the AA region, but obviously they cannot. So that means that there is some fine structure which prevents this overlapping, which is a very subtle thing, which to my knowledge is not present in typical materials in condensed matter physics. Okay, and now let's look again at the interaction. We have the Moiré unit cell, the charge distribution away from the neutrality point. I'm assuming that the neutrality point, basically the system is neutral throughout the entire Brillouin unit cell. away from the neutrality point, the charge distribution will be very much localized in the AA regions. The reason being that the K and M points are at the perimeter of the Riemann zone, so they have much more weight than the gamma point. So as soon as you dope, you start filling these points around K and M, and the charge will flow towards the AA regions. So then you will create a significant electrostatic potential. And if you put numbers that have been mentioned in this workshop already a number of times, you get numbers in the order of 50 or 100 MeVs, even with screening and everything. If, on the other hand, you project the Hubbard U onto this unit cell with 10,000 carbon atoms, you get a reduction factor which is typically higher. I mean, if you claim, if you write the Hubbard U like some electrostatic energy over a region of the size of the p-set orbital, this number you get by projecting local atomic interactions onto this low energy band of the twisted bilayer graphene is an order of magnitude in terms of 1 over L, A over L, sorry, an order of magnitude smaller than this Coulomb energy I have mentioned to you before, which is not there at the neutrality point, but appears immediately as soon as you go away from neutrality. This, now I will discuss more in detail our own work. Now I will discuss, I mean, we have a lot of tight binding calculations, which I'm not going to show here, but agree very well with what I'm going to tell, which is based on the continuum model, the standard López dos Santos et al., Stritzer-McDonald continuum model. I here emphasize again, at the gamma point, the wave functions of the continuum model vanish at the center at the AA regions. Now I'm choosing a unit cell which looks like an hexagon, so the corners of the hexagon are A, B, and B, A regions, while the center of the hexagon is an AA region. At the gamma point, the charge density is very much spread out throughout the entire unit cell, while at the K point and at the M point, which is less symmetrical, the charge region is highly concentrated at the AA point. As a result, as soon as you move away from charge neutrality, I say it again, you will create a significant electrostatic potential. If you start with the more standard condensed matter tools, the Hartree-Fock approximation, the Hartree potential will look like this. It will be, if you dope with electrons, it will be peaked at the AA regions, and it will have a minimum in the opposite case. So then what happens? You can add this Hartree potential into your continuum calculations. So if this is the original band, this is the red curve, then as you dope, you increase the filling, the Fermi potential is changed, but what is very remarkable, and that's what I would like to emphasize, the bands themselves change a lot. And the reason being that the gamma point doesn't move very much because of the addition of this Hartree potential, but the K and the M points change a lot by adding this electrostatic potential. If you assume that this band is sufficiently separated, I'm using, by the way, I'm using for this continuum approximation the the full Cauchy-Knorr parametrization of the continuum model, which includes lattice relaxation and which leads to a gap between this very narrow band and the other band. Okay, and these are different choices. This is like an approximation where the Hartree potential is approximated by only 6 harmonics, the simplest 6 harmonics. We have checked that that's a pretty good approximation of the actual potential created when you start filling up these bands using tight binding calculation. And depending on how large is the amplitude of this Hartree potential, you get these possible band structures. So actually, that means that the very shape of the bands, of these very narrow bands, is very dependent on the on the number of carriers you have in these bands themselves. In addition, if, for instance, Bistritzer and McDonald had looked for magic angles in the presence of some filling, I mean, quarter filling, half filling, the position of the magic angles or their very existence will be questionable, because the bands are rather different. And if you assume that there is very little screening and delta VH, the Hartree potential is sufficiently strong, the bandwidth is fully determined by the by the Hartree potential, becomes independent of the details of the interlayer hopping and all that. So that implies a new interaction. What I'm saying here, and it's easy to show, is almost trivial physics, is that as soon as you increase the number of carriers, you're changing the shape of the bands. A rigid band picture doesn't work for this particular problem. So that's a new interaction. You have to define a new interaction which is capable of putting together a charge density, an increase in charge density with the shape of the bands themselves. That's not usual. In many cases, people use a rigid band approximation in order to compare samples with different number of carriers. This is not possible, and this is a very special feature of these systems. I don't think it happens in many other systems. We also looked at the fog party, what have been discussed. Yes?
Can I ask one question about this? So this reconfiguration of the band structure, how much is it coming from the fact that if you look at those bands, they now involve part of the Hilbert space, which was above the gap previously?
Okay.
Changing the energy of
here,
the
this is a continuum approximation, so all the bands are included.
Yeah. So if you took the overlap...
Fukushima parametrization, the other band is like 20 MeVs above and below.
Right,
so
right.
Basically, this band remains, has its own individual features preserved. So
you're saying if you took the projector for the band, for the flat bands with zero Hartree, and look at the overlap of the projector for those bands with...
I will come to that.
Get one, basically?
I think what you're saying, the answer is yes, but I am coming to it, sorry.
If I try that from a different... with source of data with the peaks at Van Hove points.
You mean the experimental data?
Yeah, that if you change doping, then the distance will shrink.
That's a good point. We would like to learn more. Okay, here this is a bit weird, but typically the Van Hove points are the end points. The distance between end points as you turn on the Hartree potential doesn't change much. That's interesting, and that's also important from what I'm going to talk next. So the distance between the endpoints, they change, but not by that much. The bandwidth changes a lot, but in an STM spectroscopy, you will not notice it very well, because the change in the bandwidth is because the gamma point here is unaltered, while the endpoint and the K point are being lifted. But there's very little density of states at the gamma point. So with the experiments performed so far, I don't think they can resolve the entire bandwidth, because for that you need to pick up a signal from this small pocket around gamma, and I don't think it's very easy to do right now. But we also looked at the exchange part of the problem. There are two things. One is well known. This is like a tiny graphene system in the sense that it has a Fermi point and so on. Only the fine structure constant is huge. Instead of being 2 or something like that, like for graphene, it's 10 to the 2. So it's when you renormalize the Fermi velocity, it's better to resort to a 1 over n approximation rather than the usual perturbative renormalization, n being 4, which is not, could be worse, because in quantum electrodynamics, n is 3. So in any case, you will have a huge renormalization of the fine structure of the Fermi velocity. We also looked in an approximate way to the shift of the gamma point, because basically the gamma point defines for you what's the total bandwidth of the system. And there is, the occupy the gamma point, which is the one in the valence band, will be shifted downwards by an amount which is, again, of the order of this parameter E squared over L, which is the typical order of magnitude of the interaction I'm discussing here. So the exchange term will increase the bandwidth of the system significantly. But I will go back to the Hartree term, because I think that by itself is sufficiently interesting. This, I think, is important. There are also very nice calculations for certain fillings by Alan McDonald, but I'm not going to mention the role of the exchange anymore. I'm going to concentrate on what the Hartree term does to the bands and so on. Okay, so as I mentioned, one needs to write down some interaction which couples the charge density or the number of carriers to the shape of the band. And that was done way back by Jorge Hitch in the times of high TC, and he called it assisted hopping. And definitely it's a term that if you treat at the mean field level, whenever you have some number of electrons, you take the expectation value of these ends here, and then you will be changing hoppings. I mean, Jorge intended it as, I think, well-taken criticism of the Hubbard model, because all what he was saying is that if you keep U, which is a quantity, an atomic quantity, a quantity typical of each atom in your system, you have also to take into account that the atoms have higher excited levels, because the level separation in an atom is typically of the same order as the U. And then as soon as you do that, then you can allow the wave functions of the atoms to relax, to expand, and if you put all those atoms into a lattice, you will change the hopping. So in that respect, I think Jorge had a point, then he generalized the topic and said assisted hopping was very important not only for high TC, but for other materials as well. That was kind of controversial. I'm not going to go into it, but definitely there is a system where assisted hopping, I think, is well justified, is twisted by layer graphing. And in addition, it fits very well with this very special Vanier functions people have discussed way back. Because as I said, let me see if I can go to the Vanier functions again. Yeah. They seem to overlap here at the AA regions. They do not overlap because there's this fine structure which prevents the direct overlap between them from being finite. But as soon as you turn on the potential precisely at these regions, you will scramble everything. So it makes sense that they will, I mean, there will be matrix elements between this new potential you're turning on the AA regions and different Vanier functions which seem to overlap there. So the thing is quite consistent. Okay, so what we did, and that was a question I wanted to ask to the previous speaker, instead of using a 10-band model or a 5-band model, we use a kind of caricature of the Cosino full model with a lot of hoppings. We truncated them very, very heavily. I mean, in that respect, it's not such a good approximation. And then we added assisted hopping. And we added an assisted hopping, which, this Hamiltonian now is a 2x2 matrix. So from looking at the bands we obtained from the continuum approximation, we could guess reasonably well where to put the new hopping. Because the fact that if you look at, for instance, the blue band, the distance at the endpoint or at the K point, it doesn't change very much. So that means that you don't have a lot of AB hoppings. All the new hoppings you are generating are of the AA type, which go into the diagonal of this 2x2 Hamiltonian. Okay, so then you get these bands. So in the absence of Hartree potential, this, I agree with the previous speaker, because it had very few hoppings, the cutoff is very high. It's not very, doesn't reproduce very well the continuum bands. But what this very simple extra term reproduced pretty well is the effect of the Hartree potential. It will shift the K and M points, it will leave the gamma point unaltered, and that is what you want to describe. So you definitely have this extra assisted hopping term. So then what can you do? And then the Hamiltonian, we wrote the interaction Hamiltonian like that. There's a purely repulsive part, which is a term between the six Vanier functions which come together at a given AA site. This repulsive part has been discussed already by Patrick Lee and co-workers. And then there is the assisted hopping term, which, as I said, following our previous analysis, we included only a new AA hoppings. And then there are two prefactors, which we don't know, because these two pieces will be screened in different ways, and we didn't work it out yet. But they will be of the order of E squared over the Moiré unit length. And then you can write a Bogoliubov of the, you can decouple, I mean, you can go to Fourier space, and you can decouple this piece of the Hamiltonian in the usual way in order to solve the problem by Bogoliubov of the gens. There are many, I mean, and we were looking for superconductivity, there are many superconducting phases possible. We looked for just plain S-wave superconductivity. And then the problem is that there are many gaps you can define, there are many pairings you can define out of this Hamiltonian. So again, but the thing is that if you look, there are terms which can multiply by BH1, which for S-wave pairing are typically bad. But then there are these terms which contain these functions F and G turns out that it can be negative throughout some area of the Brillouin zone. I fully agree with Jorge Hirsch in saying that extended hopping is favorable for superconductivity, at least within certain fillings, for certain points in the Brillouin zone. That's what we'll try to plot here. These are Fermi surfaces at different fillings. There are always two pockets. The Fermi surface is this grayish line. The reddish area is where repulsive interactions prevail. And bluish areas is where attractive interactions prevail. So depending on your feeling, you can have superconductivity or you cannot. And we're not discussing here other possible correlated states like ferromagnetism or insulating behavior in general. It's very difficult to estimate a critical temperature out of this. Everything depends very strongly on all the parameters you have. But definitely the critical VCS, yeah.
So what is the condition that the assisted hopping, how much bigger it has to be than the local repulsion for these two?
That's what I mean. That's a very good point. We didn't work it out in detail. It depends on, I mean, there may be more assisted hopping than for example, Oscar Waffe, who has looked into this, has more terms. It's unclear to us at this stage. We know that these two terms are comparable.
No, sorry, just within the model, if you look for a solution in S-wave channel, not numbers, but the ratio between them, how much bigger?
Oh, for this particular calculation, if it is one, is enough. The ratio, if the ratio is one, is enough.
Oh, so if they're the same, it already wins.
Yeah, the ratio is going to be always a further unity. And then it is tricky because here we're neglecting, I mean, in this very localized model we have cooked up, we're leaving screening, we're leaving many things.
Right.
For sure, to a first approximation, these two terms are going to be there. There may be more terms in addition, and they are going to be screened, and we don't know yet how.
Sure, but even for this model, S-wave is one possibility.
Yeah.
What about other states?
We don't know.
But you solve for K-dependent gaps. Apparently, you can factorize.
Yeah, but we I agree. We could do it, but we have. It's a good point. So we look for, we wanted to be more conservative, so to be old-fashioned. Okay, so the only thing we can say about the critical temperature is that it will have a prefactor, it's going to be the bandwidth, and then here, typically in the BCS equation, you have the density of states and the interaction. The interaction is this huge thing because it's the Hartree potential times some factor. So the critical temperature can be anything. And I heard from Abrikoso that no serious theory should dare to estimate the critical temperature because it depends so critically on many unknown parameters. I fully agree. The only thing you can do is to identify trends, but everything points out that the critical temperature can be high, can be anything. I don't know how much time I have. So let me wrap up what I have said so far. First, this question that different states in the Brillouin zone of the twisted graphene by layer, they have charge distributions quite different. That doesn't happen in ordinary localized metals or localized crystals in general. Away from the neutrality point, you will be shifting charge back and forth, and then you are creating significant electrostatic potentials. These electrostatic potentials, in turn, modify the bands, which you can describe in terms of assisted hopping terms, and those assisted hopping terms are favorable for superconductivity. This is a unique property of these systems. I again emphasize that I don't know of many systems in condensed matter which show these features. And moreover, I think, I mean, I have used at the end a discussion based on Vanier function. But I think even if the bands overlap and you don't have well-defined Vanier functions anymore, this change, I mean, you can always do calculations, turn on, try to make a self-consistent Hartree calculation, and my guess, I'm not 100% sure, is that this Hartree calculation will again lead to highly distorted bands. So the mechanism will be there irrespective of whether you have Vanier, well-defined Vanier functions because there are isolated bands or not. Okay, so now let me continue talking a little. Okay, but now I wanted to talk precisely about the experiments you mentioned. At least they show that the bands are moving around as you dope. So in that respect, it's consistent, also I cannot tell how consistent. And this theoretical calculation, this Hartree-Fock calculation by Alan MacDonald and co-workers, it also shows that depending on the filling, the bands are changing. So all those very recent experiments are at least not inconsistent with this picture I'm presenting you. And let me take five more minutes discussing new things to do in the future. Okay, these are calculations for different. I was not aware before coming here that people experimentally were actually working on these systems. This is twisted monolayer and bilayer. This is the bandwidth as function of angle. And we were a bit discouraged because if you compare these dependences with the dependency found by this Strether and MacDonald, here you have much sharper peaks and much better defined magic angles, but it seems that it doesn't prevent superconductivity, nevertheless. And these are other things for the future. I will talk a little bit about stellate relaxation and the origin of the magic angles, but let me also emphasize that, of course, short-range interactions, as the work we started already, are important. This, I think, is crucial. In this paper, which we published way back, we also emphasize that you could get similar features to the ones you get with magic angles by applying heterostrains. By that I mean strains which are different in the two layers. Then again, you will have A, B regions, A regions, B, A regions, and so on. And you could have very, very narrow bands if you kind of prepare the right heterostructure. And this is the question of the origin of the magic angle. This paper, Ashwin mentioned the other day. This is our paper. Ashwin and co-workers didn't mention that in a footnote, we describe where these magic angles for this gauge model are, and they obey this very simple formula. And the reason why we didn't make a big fuss about it is that we didn't have at the time a good explanation for this very simple formula, and we still haven't. So it's very frustrating. In general, the magic angles, they're coming from level crossings. That was also noticed by Leon Valens and co-workers here. And then you have level crossings at M, level crossings at gamma, and they're typically quite close, and that's why you have minima in the total bandwidth. But the total bandwidth is never zero if you include AA and AB hop. If you take out the AA hoppings, then all these level crossings coincide, and you have totally flat bands, as you find also noted that, and that is very remarkable. That looks like a Landau level, but with a magnetic field. I don't know of any condensed matter system without a true magnetic field, which has flat bands throughout the entire Brillouinson. It's a mystery to us. And these crossings are curious because, as in, we also have resources in this paper, you can write down very simplistic models, which are 12 by 12 for the gamma point, or you also did 4 by 4, I mean, keeping only a few wave vectors. And then you can explain the crossings, that's fine. But as soon as you move away from these high symmetry points, which is sensible to expect crossings, there are no crossings anymore. There's level repulsion. That's what it should be. So why there is no level repulsion, for instance, in this model, is when you don't have any symmetry which protects these crossings, is again mysterious. And moreover, this is the model. So the crucial thing, I mean, tau is a matrix, a Pauli matrix related to the layer index. And the whole thing is that this gauge field you cook up here contains a piece which goes like tau x and another which goes like tau y, so the two pieces of the gauge field don't commute, and that's what we call a non-abelian gauge field. And the funny thing is that, okay, you can simplify further this model and kill one of the two pieces and you have an abelian gauge field model, and the magic angles disappear. Now you put a small fraction of the part of the gauge field which you have discarded, but let's say it's 1,000 of the other, and you bring back the magic angles and the completely flat bands and so on. So it's very mysterious. Any suggestion or contribution will be very welcome, but we're stuck at this level. And let me also discuss the question of relaxation, because that was mentioned by Tim Kashiras before. We are looking to many cases, because there's a whole zoo depending on which kind of interlayer hoppings we use and interlayer forces. Let's suppose that you know better the interlayer forces than the interlayer hoppings. There's the question whether you use something which is, depends on the local environment, in which case you can distinguish gamma 3 and gamma 4 if you go to Bernal stacking. Or typically people don't do it, but I think it's crucial. Miller wrote about that way back. And then you have many possibilities depending on how much. I mean, if you go to small angles, the band structure is really complicated. Not always you have really sharp, narrow bands. And then what we try to find out is how reliable is the continuum model nevertheless. And you have to work hard, but it is. I mean, you have to keep a lot of harmonics in the interlayer hopping. But you can go to the helical limit, where you have a very low angle and you have very narrow channels between AB and BA regions, and still everything works. And that's all. Thank you for your attention.
Does the physical hop interaction lead to some bound states?
I cannot tell.
If I take an empty band.
And put two electrons only. Presumably. I think presumably, yes, but I can't. I mean, at least in one dimension, I don't see why not.
Mm-hmm. And what's the sign of this interaction?
It doesn't matter. It will change from, you will always get a negative piece, because the coupling you have goes from positive to negative. Mm-hmm. You change the sign, the positive, in K-space. The regions in K-space where this interaction is repulsive will become positive and vice versa. So any sign you put will lead to superconductivity. One will be more on the whole part of the subband or the electron part, but the fact that it favors superconductivity doesn't change.
So in KTC it's on the whole side.
Yeah, that's what Jorge likes to say, because he calculated the sign very explicitly.
Would there be a way to look for evidence of this assisted hopping-driven mechanism experimentally?
Possible evidence are these STM experiments. If they can show that the bands are changing, the shape of the bands is changing significantly as a function of feeling, that will be the most convincing evidence. As far as the type of superconductivity and so on, I don't know. I mean, there will be superconductivity, but where it comes from, I don't think it's easy to say.
Okay. So besides superconductivity, what other kind of states that term would favor?
That's a good thing. None. At least to a first approximation, it will not favor charge density waves, spin density waves, and you have this Kohn-Luttinger theorem that any metal eventually will be a superconductor if it cannot turn into something else. So that's the good thing, and that is something which Jorge has noticed. This assisted hopping doesn't favor other broken symmetry states, or at least it's not very easy to find other broken symmetry states favored by assisted hopping. So the only thing you have left is superconductivity.
Can you be going to the previous question about finding the formation of the bands? Can you be more specific, because both experiments show that the bands are getting deformed with the filling factor? Is there any particular feature that we should look for?
I was not aware that. Shit, I don't know what's happening. I was not aware that those experiments were being done. I thought you needed encapsulated graphene, and then STM was ruled out and so on. Thing is, this is the kind of bands you get out of the Hartree approximation. And you can, if the screening was lower, then the bandwidth was were going to be totally determined by the Hartree potential. I mean, you can imagine as a theory that you have a very strong electrostatic interaction, and then these bands very quickly will be totally determined by the Hartree approximation. The problem, as I say, is that probably the spectroscopy can only tell things like the where the Van Hoff singularities are, and they're moving synchronization. So they're not kind of changing a lot, they're changing a little bit. I'm not sure. I suppose at some point there should be a way of mapping the entire band. I don't know if ARPES can do it. That will be harder. I am thinking about it, but I cannot give a good answer to that question.
Don't see more questions, so thanks very much.